On Sirius XM Radio.
We're racing two-year-olds in California and Kentucky. Please consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions, and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
Just minutes from downtown Saratoga Springs, you'll find GMP Farm, a revolutionary state-of-the-art equine therapy and rehabilitation facility offering the most advanced equipment and knowledgeable staff to care for your equine athlete. From oxygen therapy and laser treatments to thermal imaging, dry salt room, and cryotherapy treatment, all alongside a 7/8 mile taffeta training track, GMP Farm is revolutionizing equine care. To see a full list of services and book your horse's rejuvenation session, visit gmpfarm.net today.
This is At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Hour three on this Wednesday, and going to get a couple of minutes in with John Sikora on the heels of a outrageous Phasing Tipton Saratoga sale. John, congratulations on several fronts, obviously.
Yeah, thank you. It was a great sale, a lot of energy, a lot of momentum. Our sires had a very good result and really built upon the momentum to lead into the September sale. So hats off to Phasing Tipton. Recruited really good horses, international owners. Everybody was active, and it sort of had a buzz like it used to in the old days 20 years ago. You know, the Saratoga sale was considered a boutique international sale that was coveted by all and participated by, you know, with sort of every nation. So it was a great thing to see that rekindled this year. Really, really robust bidding and fantastic results for the industry.
Well, John, you talk about circulating and this is always an important week at Saratoga, starting with the roundtable Thursday, the jockey club's view of the state of the industry, then the big race day on Saturday, and then the sale. You have as important a view of industry trends and the pulse of the stakeholders as anybody. some thoughts about, you know, what you encountered and you know, where we are at, you know, a pretty key juncture in the year.
I mean, I think there are a lot of really positive things here. I was talking to Drew Fleming today on the way home that, you know, if you think that there's roughly $1 billion spent on infrastructure at racetracks here this year between, you know, Maryland, New York, and this commitment to the future, Keeneland as well. So, you know, those three trends, I think, are exciting to have a better fan experience, a brick-and-mortar experience that people who come to the races can enjoy an ambience and sort of have an expectation that this is a world-class sport and world-class facilities. And, you know, hopefully that trend sort of grows beyond those three tracks, other, you know, rival tracks competing for horses, business, patronage. Would say we need to up our game and make our facility more technologically modern and more comfortable and sort of offer more amenities to fans. So I think that's a really substantial, significant trend. I can't think of the last time any real money has been spent on a racetrack, and now we have in excess of $1 billion on three different racetracks. So I think that's a great thing. You know, I guess I would add, you know, Churchill and what they did with their paddock. So when you combine those four racetracks, it's very significant. You know, we're all in it together. We need healthy racing, healthy sales, healthy wagering, and you know, those sort of quadrants all have to work together. All have to be healthy for the business to thrive. So a lot of positives. I believe, you know, lower fatalities, which is always a, you know, yep, something we'll talk a lot about, but you know, it's always on the cusp. I know, you know, Mike Rapoli's been talking about aftercare and doing something significant. John Stewart had that big poker tournament, raised a lot of money. So I think there's an acceptance that we have some issues to deal with and that we're trying to tackle them. And, you know, everything's about to start. So, you know, if you have first any problem, you don't have a solution without recognition of a problem. I think we have the recognition. We're moving towards things. You know, racing is always, you know, the unknown. Everybody can have a good horse. It's a two-year-old season. It's Saratoga. Breeders' Cup's not far away. So I think it's really exciting time, not only seasonally, but, you know, for the business as a whole. I saw, you know, Bupat Samar. You know, the international buyers that you don't always see here. So, you know, I think there's a recognition that the business is getting smaller or becoming sort of one uniform currency, that of the horse. And, you know, the Saudi have done an amazing job, you know, in a relatively short period of time in promoting their World Cup and the World Cup Day. And, you know, Dubai was at the forefront, the leader of the, you know, Middle East racing. So I think there's a lot of positives. You know, I guess the one issue that is the troubling one is that of California, and I hope they'll come up with some type of remedy. I believe it's not a remedy without, you know, government commitment and government intervention, because, you know, Indian casinos and exclusivity that they have, those were all granted permission. So, you know, if we had a strong enough advocate for our industry, I believe a sit down with the group could yield and exact some change. I don't think the industry can do it, because we really don't have the power to make anybody do anything other than, you know, have a wish list and ask. But certainly the legislature or the governor, you know, has the ability to say we have an industry important to the state. It's at a point of extreme vulnerability. We need to supplement purses. You know, the lifeblood of owners is purses, and it goes to trainers and everybody. So there's got to be a way to have a supplementation of California purses to be competitive. And if anybody would doubt that, you'd look at, you know, Turfway and Ellis Park, Kentucky Downs.
Yep. You know,
nobody went. Now you can't get in. So it's you'd rather be at Del Mar or Saratoga, but you're going to follow the money. So, you know, but from a sales point of view, which is really my focus this week, you know, we had a small tight consignment. We sold four of five. We had a good result. You know, good Magic they love, Curlin they love, and Charlatan is off to a great start, and I believe we have, you know, some very, very high-end top yearlings to sell here in September. So it was a good introduction to Charlatan, and I think that he'll certainly be on everybody's, you know, lips as far as we need to go look at Charlatan yearlings. So the proof is in the pudding, right? They have to run, but it's nice when you have a buzz horse and people are sort of buying him as if he's already a successful sire. That's great. A great trend, and now we need to, you know, to follow through at the racetrack, which all you can do is produce the best foals you can by the best mares and see if that genetic switch is turned on, you know, and hopefully it is. He's got all the requisites and criteria you'd expect in a horse, and, you know, now it's hurry up and wait. So we're eagerly looking forward to September, and that those dates will be upon us quickly.
John, you know, you tipped my hand to the next follow-up, really, because I always encourage you to really acknowledge the work of the Stallion roster, and in addition, you know, the sixth Charlatan, $3.7 million, six Curlins for $5.4 million, a big sale for Good Magic, McLean's Music. But then even Ghost Zapper, with the $1.2 million seller, Army Mule, one head, $300,000. Midnight Loot, one head, $300,000.
Yeah, it was, you know, great result. I mean, Saratoga did an outstanding job. You know, Boyd Browning, Bane Welker, and the team of recruiting the physical horses. And I think that offsets, you know, a lot of possible prejudice against an older sire, or, you know, a horse that people are sort of not as popular in the breeding shed as they've done it in the past. And if you walk in a, you know, physical beauty and a vet, and, you know, has enough pedigree, that, you know, they give lots for them. So I think the money was well distributed amongst the top sires, up and coming sires, and had the best feel I've sensed in many years that sale. So, you know, rather than view it as a sort of a competition of one sale company versus the other, I think, you know, a great first sale really sets the table and has an expectation for the next sale, that being Keelan. So, well, I think one leads well into the other, and if this sale was, you know, a tepid market and uncertainty and a lot of RNAs, I think that would make September sort of vulnerable. So just the opposite happens. I think there should be a lot of inertia and momentum for the upcoming September sale.
Outstanding. Well, John, I wanted to check in with you and get a read on, you know, your thoughts and your experience. And obviously, Curlin with his exploits, particularly, you know, the last couple of Breeders' Cups, Good Magic with outlandish early success in his career. You know, it's just been a really, you've gone from strength to strength here in recent years. So continued success. Congratulations.
Thank you. And keep doing a great job with the show, talking about our industry, which I believe is the best in the world.
John Sepura, everybody, and hillanddalefarms.com, of course, and you can start, you should be planning already for next breeding season, and John and Jared Burdine and the staff always ready to help you and help you with your matings and help you in the business, whatever your goals are. I mean, I didn't add this up, but, well, let's see. There's 3.7 and Curlin, $5.4 million. Good Magic, $3.4 million. Eight, so what, 9.1, 9.5, 12.5, 13.7. Unbelievable, $14 million, 14.3, and that doesn't even include the McLean's Musics or the Violences. And actually, just the fact, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, eight of, I don't, I mean, John stands, I don't know, 9 or probably 12 stallions. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah, eight different Hillandale stallions. Very proud to have the association we do with Hillandale Farms and John Sikora. We're going to see if, let me see if there's an answer here yet. There is not. We're keeping an eye, and I would love to help people because I know, like, for instance, our friend Vin the Stevedore, as you know him, Vin and his pal Dominic, they were hoping to go down to Virginia and to come, you know, from California, and they were leaving on Sunday morning, so they're, you know, literally up in the air, as the saying goes, about, you know, about the trip. So everybody kind of hanging on, you know, on this storm situation. And I can also include that at NYRA they're also working through logistics and monitoring, you know, where the storm path is and you know, the changing forecast. And I, you know, everybody trying to make their decisions, you know, as best they can and as far out in front as they can, to make it easier on everybody logistically. You know, that includes moving the horses around. So we'll see if there's any change. Thanks to John for that. Looking forward to the Keeneland trip. It looks like we're not going to go to Virginia under the circumstances, because you know, to leave now and be there Thursday and Friday when there's not going to be anybody there, it doesn't seem to make good sense. So there's still a chance that we'll see what happens if they're good for Saturday. Maybe I said to Tina this morning, I said maybe we'll swing into action, you know, tomorrow after the show, and maybe go down for Friday. I don't know. It puts everything, you know, puts everything in sort of on hold. So, all right. Seth Merrow is going to join us, and we'll do some, I think we'll do a little capping and get a couple of plays going with Seth. And I'm keeping an eye. I told you, I gave you the scratches. So we'll see what we want to do on the multi-race wagers. Seth Merrow, good morning.
Good morning.
You sound like you're in the next room.
You sound fine.
Okay, no, you sound sharp and big and big, big bold voice.
No, joining. I don't know. I have a big bold voice, maybe.
let me have Brian take you down just a tiny bit. I'm speculating, Seth, on the weather situation, and this is going to be. This is going to be clearly touch and go into the weekend, based on what the way this storm is tracking in for Friday night and Friday.
No question about it. And, you know, today we're off the turf and the steeplechase got canceled, but I'm sitting back here on the backstretch on the TV set and it is a gorgeous day. But I was at the sale last night, and as I left, it started, it was a sprinkle, I would define it, but it was steady. And so it was a soaker overnight, but It currently is a gorgeous afternoon or a gorgeous morning going into an afternoon here on the backstretch.
Definitely, and here as well in Greenwich. Before we look at anything on today's card. And as I told everybody going into the break, we were not terribly for an off the turf scenario. We really were not impacted too terribly. Particularly the ninth stayed intact, and there's as many betting interests off the turf as there were on. So I think we can still have some fun today. Some thoughts about the weekend, Seth, as we look back.
Arthur's Ride backed up the big number in the previous race with a, you know, from the outside post position, had to get pushed early, did, and took the lead and led him all the way around. So throws his name in the hat in the handicap division, which, you know, kind of up in the air like the three-year-old so far this year. But that was a nice performance by Arthur's Ride. Ways and Means, I thought, looked good in the test. And hearing Chad Brown in the winner's circle afterwards, it looks like she's, you know, aimed at Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint, it sounds like. So they'll keep her sprinting. And he said maybe one more start before Breeders' Cup. But that was a nice performance there. The Queen's MG. I had Safi on TV, I don't know, a week or so ago. And I said, boy, the opening day stake at the big price, it seemed like that price was crazy given that she was the favorite in the stakes race prior where she had trouble. And he said, yeah, but, you know, coming out of the trouble, I wasn't sure what I had exactly. And so he was happy with the victory there. And then he kind of continued, I'm still not quite sure what I have, but he's got to be sure now. That was an impressive victory for the Queen's MG. Going to be interesting to see if she goes for the sweep, because you don't often get the, in this day and age, you don't often get the two-year-old sweep up here anymore, but certainly she lines up for it. And then one of the performances the weekend, and I've talked about it this morning on the show a couple of times already, defining what makes Saratoga so much fun. The fans were totally into it. That performance by Next came down the stretch, and the fans were really into it. And it, I mean, you know, if there is a marathon division, he is clearly the king of it. And that was, as I say, a highlight of the weekend, I thought, with a dominant performance in the marathon for Next.
I made note of that, actually, either yesterday or Monday, on Sunday. I was actually sitting with Dave Hill and his wife, Katie, and Seth, you and I always look at each other and say, oh, that was good after the show. Sunday, reiterate to people, and I know a lot of people, because I got some emails when I told people Monday, you know, they can go to the Capital OTB YouTube page and watch any of the programming, but, you know, ours is the best. So and a lot of people did, and some people didn't realize, you know, the programming was available that way. In fact, apparently for 2 weeks in a row, the network wasn't aware that it was available that way. I knew you'd like that. I was with Dave Hill and his wife watching. We watched the Birdstone. The people, as he went back to the Oklahoma side, people were applauding, and it was really nice. I mean, it had a, you know, it's that savvy race goer, horse player fan that you get here. And, you know, as he was walking up the stretch, people recognizing that it, you know, it was the stake winner, and that this is a unique horse. You know, Doug Cowens has said repeatedly, I mean, this is one of those things that you just don't know until you start running a horse a mile and a half, a mile and five eighths, a mile and three quarters, and they just don't get tired. They've got a lung capacity, and they've got whatever is going on in that engine. The lactic acid doesn't build up. There's something in their makeup that makes them an endurance horse, and he's... There always seems to be one of these around the game that ends up towering over the rest of them.
And, you know, there was on social media, there was the, oh, you know, let's get him in the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And I kind of feel like that would be fun, no question about it, to see how he faced up, given what we've seen. But also, I don't blame them if they just keep popping down with the marathon down at Parks coming up. That comes up every year, and I would not blame them for just picking up checks and as he, you know, dominates his specialty. So I could go both ways with the Jockey Club Gold Cup idea.
Well, I'm always a little bemused by people, you know, trying to dictate other people's property. It's kind of funny, actually. Everybody's like, oh, the horse should come first. Well, then, okay, why don't we let the horseman dictate what the best course of action is for this horse? And Cowan said, after the previous win, I said, Doug, well, you know, where do you stand with that? And he said point blank, we're not interested right now. He's gonna you know, take advantage of, you know, the division as it is. You mentioned the Greenwood Cup, and then there'll be the TAA Marathon, you know, the former Las Vegas Marathon that was a graded stake for a little bit.
The gelding, the graded stakes wins don't really mean as much. They can just put money in the bank at what they're good at. And so, he's regardless of where he goes, he's fun to watch. And you said it, and I totally agree. And that's what makes Saratoga so much fun. The fans are knowledgeable about the game, and they can show their appreciation for a good performance like that. And it's fun. You see it, a number of times during the season. Horses coming down the stretch in a big performance, coming back to the winner's circle. And that's always kind of one of the special things of Saratoga. I also toss in one of the special things of Saratoga. And what I tell people, if you're coming up for a week, come up sales week and go over and watch the sales. And I was over the past couple of nights, and, man, they knocked it out of the park at the sale Monday and Tuesday. It was a lot of fun and a lot of notable names there and familiar faces. But a couple of big nights, three blocks down the street from the racetrack, where I would define them as much bigger gamblers than anybody two blocks up the street at the racetrack.
Yeah, that you trot this out every year. the gamble, the biggest gamblers. That's I love that of yours. Of course, you know, some of it's a tax write-off, but
I suppose you can work that angle, but there is no question when you're paying seven figures for a yearling, you are rolling the dice.
Well, listen, they're paying six figures for weanlings, for horses that are 7 and 8 months old, for God's sakes. I'm just had the conversation with Sid, and it again, another amusing aspect to the social media landscape, where there are people wanting to ridicule the breeding industry and the the machine, the mechanism, how it operates. That's the business. It's a speculative business. This is not, what is this, some sort of new phenomena this has been going on forever. People spending money and competing with their spending for the best horses. This is not some, this is not some newly christened business concept.
No, Boots Malone, the nice William Holden movie. I want to say early 50s. They feature a Saratoga auction. So it's been going on for longer than that.
Exactly. Exactly right. The other part of what we did on Sunday, in addition to the conversation with Bruce Levine, which was, I thought, eye-opening in its own right, conversation with Dave Hill, what we talked about, Seth, and really a topic that I've maintained for a while about the sports betting. That's not a conversation that you know, people get to hear. And, you know, having somebody with Dave's just obvious, extensive understanding of, you know, of the, you know, all the interdisciplines in you know, gambling overall. So that's another reason to you know, pull up the show from Sunday.
And I think you're absolutely right. He's a guy who, if people are unfamiliar, you know, we talked about his book about Hot Springs Vapors, which kind of put him on the map for some people because it was well reviewed when it came out. But and I brought up his website and showed the website address there. And if you go to the website, you can get all of his kind of written work for, you know, weekly, monthly publications and whatnot. He writes extensively about gambling and gamblers of all ilks. And so it's seldom you get somebody that can talk about that, not only knowledgeably, but be articulate about it. And he kind of, I think, was explaining things that would be eye-opening for a lot of people on the gambling side of things, and particularly the sports betting side of things, which has become so prolific over the past, you know, 3 years or so.
Well, and which may already, you know, have reached something of a apex, and may, you know, if you listen and if you've been following Dave's series in Rolling Stone, he basically says that the, you know, the sports betting companies are you know, they're looking for exit ramps.
Yeah, and you were making the great point that creates a real opportunity for horse racing, which is a different model that folks may find preferable when, you know, they've had their shot at sports gambling. Horse racing may be the direction that we can lead them to if we take advantage of that. I totally agree.
Well, I've said that from day one, that people were going to be lambs to the slaughter, and we have to be there, you know, to say to them, you got a fighting chance in this game, even with a difficult landscape when it comes to the cost of our betting, give and take out, you know, cost of data and all the things you need to be a successful player. But you still have got a fighting chance, you know, betting against each other as opposed to the house. The reality that some people warned about, and when the sports betting landscape, you know, began to form, there were people who said they're not going to let people win. And that's one of the things that Dave Hill laid out. Even if you're a relatively small player, if they see that you're successful and that you're a savvy sports bettor, they're going to limit your action, as opposed to racing, where you want to bet 10,000, bet 10,000. No, nobody, you want to, you know, what's the famous gambler? Bet a million. I can't remember his name. The historic gambler, Jack, bet a million. I can't remember. You want to bet whatever you want to bet. Nobody's going to say to you, I'm sorry, we won't take your, you know, we're not taking that action. Not going to happen.
Yeah, and David Hill made that point, and as he was talking about that, it is enlightening for folks who may be moving into the sports betting side of things that, you know, if that's the thought process, then you're really never going to win. It's not a long-term thing that's available to you. And so that is, as I say, enlightening perhaps to folks who are new to it and getting a little bit enamored with the sports betting side of things. Yeah, something clearly you have to think about.
Well, and thank you to Leslie Knopf, ATR correspondent. Leslie Knopf, Bet a Million Gates. Thank you. Exactly. Well done. And Leslie is reminding people that the equine and sporting art display at the pavilion upstairs, if you go.
As well. And New York bread sale on the weekend, so folks have another
Sunday,
shot to get over there.
Saturday, Sunday, yeah.
Yeah.
Although that's, you know, that I'm just realizing if that's going to make if that storm is going to roll through here Friday, you know, that's going to make it unpleasant for those that are looking at the yearlings. Well, all right. So what? So that's not the first summer that we've dealt with that.
No.
On the sad side.
You know, we can knock wood that maybe the track goes a different way or we get the edge of it or so hopefully. So we'll see how it plays out.
Well, I as I mentioned, our friend Brad Morgan sent the NOAA map. I'll send it to you, Seth. It's it doesn't look promising, and I'm usually the most optimistic person there is when it comes to that. So
they got banged down in Florida, so it's a storm. There's no question about it. I mean, it's one of those
Georgia,
that will play out.
Georgia and Carolinas too.
Yeah.
It's pounding. They got 10 to 12 inches of rain.
Yeah, I was over in the pavilion last night, and I saw Matt and Ren Carruthers, and I was talking to them, and they're flying out tomorrow through Charlotte, and they were already getting warnings from the airline that it's a little iffy, perhaps.
Well, all right, let's get a couple of plays lined up. What's your dark horse play of the day?
I'm interested in the odds because there were a couple of scratches. It was the fifth race, which is on turf, and the dark horse play. I look at the weather, obviously, and the play. I don't necessarily want to go with the turf race. But this fifth race, there were some horses in there that I think are going to transfer just fine. And one of those was my dark horse play. And I said on TV this morning, I'm perfectly happy with the switch up. Now, the main track only from Linda Rice will be tough and will be legitimate. But I put Speedy Traveler on top. Phil Bauer runner, had never tried the turf before, lightly raced on a muddy track down at the fairgrounds in March, was a solid winner, has a lot of early speed. That July 19th bullet workout jumps off the page at me. 6-1 on the morning line, and that's why I made it the dark horse. But I said this morning, depending on scratches and whatnot, I don't know whether we'll get that because I think they're perfectly fine with the surface switch, as is Unsung Melody, the 5-horse who I have right underneath.
Uh-huh.
But I made my dark horse play Speedy Traveler in here, 6-5-3 for me, and then probably pull the 8 in as well. I skipped the 8 when I originally looked, with the main, even on the, you know, because I also put dirt picks up because I thought the body of the field had some interesting runners. But, you know, with scratches now, I lost a couple. So I pull the 8 in at the bottom. But, again, it's a short field with a horse with some speed. We aren't going to get the odds we wanted. But Speedy Traveler is today's dark horse play of the day.
Well, and I totally agree. In fact, I even earlier in the show, I mentioned that Unsung Melody and Speedy Traveler would certainly stay in. And L Street Lady that was going to stay in as well. Lady Milagro stayed in. She's a little bit more turfy. That's for our friend Mandy Latterer and Carlos Martin. And then you've got everyone loves Linda. I didn't think the MTO, I'm putting the multi-race ticket together and I may just use the 5 and the 6, actually. I think it looks to me like they're the two, one or the other, you know, figures to set the pace. I suppose Lady Milagro can go with a little bit, but, you know, turf, I don't know. I don't know if she's as fast. I guess she is, actually. And if you look back to her dirt races last fall. Yeah, I mean she was clipping along actually.
Even the last race, the off the turfer, she was moving. But,
yeah, she was there. Then Run for the Hills caught her. So actually, Speedy Traveler's going to have to deal with her. And that's why I put Unsung Melody, the Johnny Ortiz runner, on top, Seth, because it feels like Santana can sit off a little bit, like he did in that Prairie Meadows, winning the Sailorville.
Yeah. Yeah, that's certainly possible. And again, I just, with the of those speeds that we talked about just now, Speedy Traveler has the outside. And so I thought maybe strategically might have a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Tina was asking me, there's a fence. We're having a fence installed, and she had me look out the window. the more I look at this, Seth, I think the more I like Unsung Melody. And, I think you got it now. I may have to rethink Everyone Loves Linda, because you look at that allowance win at Aqueduct, and there again, another stalk and go. This is, for a six-horse field, this is not simple. So I'm glad, actually, you focused in on this.
Yeah, I think Speedy. It often, you think and you look, and oh, there's going to be a duel, and then one of them goes out and takes the lead and leads them all the way around. And I'm kind of anticipating, hoping, I suppose, that it's Speedy Traveler.
Well, the beauty of this is, if you want somebody from off the pace, and that's why I sided with Unsung Melody, you do have multiple options. That's the thing in here that works. The fact that, there's at least three horses that, you could conceive of, of being on or near. And, Brittany Russell, this L Street Lady, you could make the case that she's the class of this field, actually. And it's funny, she's been rained off now three straight races.
Oh, right. Had some stakes tries a little bit earlier in the career. Number-wise, a little light, but second start of the season. Certainly improvement is not out of the question. As far as the odds, you're going to get value on that one, I think.
I'm glad we discussed this, because I may end up spreading elsewhere and really leaning heavily now on Unsung Melody. The more I look at this, I think that I think she's got the best opportunity in here. And if Santana does the same thing he did at Prairie, Now, of course, this is 5.5, and that they right, they stay at 5.5.
Yeah, I believe so.
So,
yeah, it will be running. Right. Yeah, the conditions.
All right, let's go to. You got your dark horse. I've got my DePaula play. I'm leaning on Backstretch Rose in here, Seth. What'd you do in the sixth?
That's funny you mention it, because I went 4-2-10-1, but as I handicapped it on TV this morning, I kind of looked at Backstretch Rose and I said, it's 6-1. I'm going to take a little look at this horse and extra, particularly if you get maybe a little more value perhaps, but I don't know whether that will happen. But on the turf to dirt move, moving down the claiming ranks, the outside post position, I put it in the third spot originally, but as I talked this morning, I became a little more enamored with Backstretch Rose myself.
Well, and there's a couple of things to like. I mean, she drops below the level of her breakthrough win, that maiden 50 win going 1/16 to Churchill in June. She did it for 50. And there's winners out of that race. And then she went to 50 non-2. So this is a significant class drop, the 50% value drop. And she goes turf to dirt, coming, also toting in the bullet. At 6-1, coming from off the pace. It's funny, Seth. I've had... really have struggled the first half of the year with the DePaula plays. I had the one nice $20+ winner and one placement. And other than that, I've had horses that, I have seen basically get caught. I've had maybe taken a few too many horses on the front end. So it occurred to me that you know, let's use somebody here that's going to be coming late and should get a pace, you know, a nice enough pace set up in here as well. So
I thought the two Rudy horses are interesting to me as well. They're the ones I originally had on top, 4, 2, and 10. But I thought dropping out of starter allowance, La Vida Sophia at 9-2 could be a little bit of a player. And Lightly Ray steps out of the maiden ranks, and it's always a little bit of an obstacle to move in against limited winners. But at the N2L level, being lightly raced and up improving numbers, I thought Raining at the Beach was playable as well.
Don't disagree. I used Bump in the Night. As well, Linda off the claim and the raise.
Off the claim at Oaklawn. You don't often see Linda Rice horses coming up from Oaklawn off a claim.
Well, she had.
She jumped in Kentucky, but.
Absolutely. Well, people greatly offended by anything that Linda does. It's the most unbelievable thing that I've ever seen. It doesn't matter what she does. If it was somebody, you know, with a third leg, how smart, savvy, so savvy. But Linda does it, and she's some sort of a criminal. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It is mind-boggling.
That's become one of my favorite things to get mad about, actually.
it's absolutely true. I mean, the Kentucky thinks she was playing by the rules, and everybody's like, oh, he's going down and claiming in Kentucky, bring him to New York. It's, well, she's eligible to do that, and it was kind of slow at the beginning, and then she had a period where they were doing very well, so good for her.
They don't like that either.
No, I know. Yeah.
That's amazing. Another price I want to talk about, the third race, that starter allowance. What'd you do?
Third race, I'm 1, 4, 3, and 2, so I'm not a price. I thought up the last few races, Own the Field was in some decent form. Rider Special for Linda Rice, second off the claim. Got a little experience at this level and just missed last time. Dillinger for Brittany Russell is interesting to me because, I'm a buyer guy. I use the buyers and has a buyer that certainly puts this horse right in the thick of the conversation, but did it in a 25 conditional claimer. So I'm curious. I'm really interested to see what the odds are at post time and what Dillinger does. I have the horse in the mix. Wouldn't be any shock. But on the class move, I was curious to see how it would play out. What did you think?
I picked Dillinger. Again, at six to one, it's my kind of horse, to be honest. You're talking on the buyer scale. I'm looking at Theragraph as well. And Dillinger's right on a par with Own the Field. So, I think he's interchangeable with the maker favorite on the rail. And I think Tripwise figures well. I like the rise. Off the win for 25. Now, I'm sure some people will note that IRAD sticks with Mr. Papa Giorgio for Dutro. And, I understand. But Manny, nothing wrong with Manny in here. I see cases being made on the, for fans of turnbacks, Principe d'Oro cutting back. I used... just underneath, and it should be noted with Rudy breaking through the other day with the two wins. As I said to Rudy when I saw him on was that Friday, I saw Rudy and I said our long national nightmare is over. 0 for 29, Rudy. No, he broke through, and I said now we got to get Gustavo a win, and Gustavo promptly won. So both of the Rodriguez's are off the duck, and Rudy is notoriously streaky. I mean, he's a guy that'll go on those protracted winless skeins. And, then the pendulum will come back the other way. So I'd be...
And I will say, yeah. I wasn't a believer, early in my handicapping and betting on kind of offers at this meet. I would stick with trainers, but you get a couple weeks in, and now we're at the halfway point. The trainer's still on an offer, and we're this deep into the meet. Now I've kind of bought into it, and I'll sit back and wait. But you get a guy like Rudy, and they turn it around, and then they can get on a little bit of a run. So it'll be interesting over the next couple of weeks.
Well, we haven't discussed, we haven't brought it up actually this meet, but for you and I, and you certainly, you certainly know Jim Mazur. The handicapper books, the Saratoga handicapper books that for years would always include it. In the arsenal, along with the Daily Racing Form Saratoga Betting Guide. And, the long run, Seth, of the six-week meet, where Jim would call them the hares and the tortoises, the guys that, that typically wade into the action. And Jim would break up the meet into three two-week segments. And, the condition books, as they come out, and so, there's certain profiles. That's changed somewhat. Certainly we've got more turf than ever before, which means you also get more off-the-turf scenario, to deal with. But the point is there is still a lot of that ebb and flow, and guys that get their wins early in the meet and then tail off, and guys that struggle early in the meet and then have big second halves. So you are at the juncture where, there's certain outfits that you want to start taking, you want to watch and see maybe their horses are running back. You know who I haven't checked back on lately that had a slow first half was Dave Donk.
Oh, right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I would think he will turn around in the second half of the meet.
You would think. I mean, he's just too good.
Because I'm thinking last year, I think that was a scenario for him as well.
Where he had a slow first half?
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that up. That seems to ring a bell with me. I'm going to have to look that up.
Well, here, while we're on that topic, and I do want you to, there was one other race we should probably look at. But let's take a quick glance at this. We usually don't have enough time to do this, and we did this this half hour.
And for folks who aren't familiar, that trainers do come in and get a slow start, and a lot of it is due to they had a little bit of the previous meet. They had a good meet. They ran out of conditions, and you can get later in the meet, and horses are getting into their conditions, and so it's a thing. It is an actual thing where they can get hot or cold just depending on what the condition book looks like.
Well, Donk, 1-for-24 is Dave, with 2 seconds and 4/3. So you have 24 starters. George Weaver, one of our favorites, and George usually makes an appearance on the show on Loose on the Lead. George, 1-for-18. However, he's got 6 seconds. That'll kill you. Jimmy Ferraro's 0-for-18, and he'll get a win. D Wayne, I've been sort of watching. It's funny, the maiden specials, because Lucas is good typically for a big price maiden winner every year. Lucas is 0-for-17, 3 seconds and 1/3.
And so the kids standing outside the paddock have been denied their win photo.
I suppose so. Chris Engelhart is 0-for-12.
Unusual. Oh, that's that is unusual.
Whit Beckman looking for his first win, 0-for-10. Bruce Brown 0-for-10. Randy Persaud is 0-for-10. Carlos 0-for-9. Charlie Baker 0-for-9.
It It's tough. It's tough to win at Saratoga. There is no doubt about that.
Well, it's always worth perusing. Let's look for some other Wayne Potts over 15. And that's, yeah, there you go. Then there's Ray Handel, who was 6 for 19, and I think all six are with Dylan Davis.
Oh, Dylan Davis may be one of the jockey stories of the meet with the prices
he's
bringing in. I saw somebody popped up
ROI
for the jockeys there the other day. It's just insane.
Yeah, he's killing it. He's just killing
it.
Yeah. Final push. What'd you do in the seventh?
Seventh.
30 seconds.
I went 11, 10, 2, and 3, but I think this race is maybe more interesting than I wound up with. But I thought on the class drop, that one may have and I'm just saying 11 because I'm not going to try to pronounce it. But the 10, I think, is comparable. Pascal Moon at 10 to 1 for Tom Morley off the claim, I think, could be a player as well. So 11, 10, 2, and 3.
Neuschwanstein, I think, is the pronunciation on the 11. I picked them too, but I thought Royal King, John Toscano. Let's get the Toscano family, all 14 of them into the winner's circle.
I did not use that one, but I would not argue off because I think this is kind of a competitive race. The bottom of the mix I used On the Ledge off the claim for Bruce Brown.
Yeah.
Off a nice win. I think that one's live too.
Very good. Seth Merrill, everybody. I think I'm going to be with you on Sunday. So.
All right. I'll double check.
Don't get a substitute.
Yeah. No. There is no substitute. There is no substitute for Steve Peck.
Seth Merrill, everybody. John Sakura earlier, as well as Dick Powell. And we have not. Let me see. I'm just checking back. No, still no answer. Keep an eye out. We should have an answer soon from Virginia. All right. Thanks to Sid as well. Sire Watch Better Refocus. Anna Seitz from Fasig Tipton. Good luck if you're playing. I'll get the plays up shortly. Talk to you in the morning, everybody. Good luck.